Laudator Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Monday, February the 10th, authorities in Libya uncover two mass graves in the country's southeastern desert. Myanmar's military continue to bomb places of worship while the Archbishop of Yangon calls for prayers and peace efforts. But first, church leaders in the Democratic Republic of Congo push for dialogue in the beleaguered East, where faith-based organizations are providing vital support to hundreds of thousands displaced by the fighting. In the Vatican, I'm Linda Bordoni. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, a lull in fighting is reportedly holding in the week of last weekend's joint emergency summit of African leaders in Dar es Salaam. The summit was aimed to defuse the crisis following the new offensive of the Rwanda-backed M23 rebels in North and South Kivu. Cardinal Fridolin Ambongo has expressed support for the immediate opening of negotiations following that summit with all parties involved in the conflict. Speaking at Mass on Sunday, the Archbishop of Kinshasa stated that it is urgent time to take action by implementing a new dialogue strategy to save the nation that has been torn by ethnic violence for three decades. Lisa Zingarini reports.
In his homily on Sunday, Cardinal Ambongo said there is no more time to lose to start negotiations, warning that the DRC is in danger of falling apart, recalling the recent joint roadmap for peace and social cohesion drafted by the National Episcopal Conference and the Church of Christ in Congo to end the conflicts that have marred the country for the past three decades. The Archbishop of Kinshasa emphasized that everyone must agree to sit around the same table and resolve their differences through dialogue, following the African tradition of discussion. If we want to save our nation, let's not waste any more time, he pleaded. At the summit in Dar es Salaam on Saturday, the heads of state and government of the eight-nation East African Community and 16-member Southern African Development Community urged all parties to hold direct talks. According to the final communique, the summit specifically decided on the cessation of hostilities and an immediate unconditional ceasefire, which both state and non-state parties must adhere to. It also called for the reopening of Goma Airport and key land and lake supply routes to allow for humanitarian aid delivery, as well as the repatriation of deceased soldiers and the evacuation of the wounded. Other decisions from the summit included developing a security plan for the city of Goma and surrounding areas, convening a meeting of the chiefs of staff of the EAC and SADC armies within 5 days to verify the implementation of the agreed measures, strengthening coordination and structural complementarity between the Nairobi and Luanda peace processes, and adding facilitators from other African nations to assist in merging the two processes. I am Lisa Zingarini.
The Catholic Church has long been at the forefront of humanitarian efforts in the DR Congo. As violence seethes, the Church remains one of the few organizations actively responding to the situation, as CAFOD country representative in DRC Bernardo Balibuno told me today.
Whenever the crisis starts, the Catholic Church is always there before and during and after the crisis. And I think this is a testament of that. The Church have been through the crisis and now they are quickly responding while many other organizations have left the area. So soon as the Goma town was taken, before even the internet was reestablished in town, we were already in contact with Caritas Goma and with the Anglican Church, two of our partners, and there were internal funds from CAFOD England that we were given and we provided to our partner to start responding directly.
What is the humanitarian situation as we speak?
Well, the situation is very catastrophic. Already before the war, we had over 400,000 displaced displaced camps around Goma. And all these camps have been dismantled as the rebels were moving forward. And as bombs were dropped in these camps, many of them are living in very dire conditions. It's a rainy season. Many of them are out. Usually they are hosted by host families, but this host family themselves had to run for their lives. So the situation is very, very complex.
That was Bernard Balibuno, CAFOD country representative in DR Congo. Authorities in Libya have uncovered nearly 50 bodies from two mass graves in the country's southeastern desert. Nathan Morley reports.
According to reports, a mass grave found on a farm in the southeastern city of Kufra contained 19 bodies. Soon after, a second mass grave with at least 30 bodies was discovered elsewhere after police raided a migrant detention centre. A charity that helps migrants in Libya said that some of the victims found in the graves had been shot and killed before they were buried. Such horrific crimes are not new. Mass graves containing the bodies of immigrants and refugees have been discovered in the recent past. In 2024, police dug up the corpses of at least 65 migrants south of Tripoli. Human traffickers have benefited from more than a decade of instability, smuggling migrants and refugees across the country's borders, with six nations, including Niger, Chad, Sudan, Egypt, Algeria and Tunisia. Rights groups and the United Nations agencies have for years documented the systematic abuse of asylum seekers who are in Libya, including those forced into labour, beaten, raped and tortured. The abuse often accompanies efforts to extort money from families before they're allowed to leave the country on traffickers' boats. Libya spiralled into disintegration following a NATO-backed uprising which toppled the Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi back in 2011. The oil-rich nation has been ruled for most of the past decade by rival governments in eastern and western Libya, each backed by an array of fighter groups and foreign governments. So far this year, a total of 2,398 migrants have been intercepted at sea and returned to Libya, according to a statement by the International Organization for Migration. For Vatican Radio, this is Nathan Morley reporting.
In Myanmar, news has emerged of a bombing by the military junta of a Catholic church in Mindat, a locality in Burma's northwestern Chin state. Cardinal Charles Bo, the Archbishop of Yangon, is calling for prayers, faith and peace efforts, as Deborah Castellano-Lubov reports.
In a world often shrouded in turmoil and conflict, let's turn our eyes to Mary, the Mother of Peace. Cardinal Charles Mongbo suggested. The Archbishop of Yangon, Myanmar, who is president of the nation's bishops' conference, offered this encouragement at an event commemorating the upcoming feast of Our Lady of Lourdes in Yanglaben within his archdiocese, Bago region. The cardinal's comments came days after Myanmar's military junta bombed the Sacred Heart of Jesus Catholic Church in Mindat, a locality in Burma's northwestern Chin state. Fortunately, there were no injuries in the bombing, primarily because the priests and faithful had already left the area due to the poor security conditions and the ongoing fighting. On Sunday, Cardinal Bo reflected on the plight of the suffering and how to maintain hope. Let us envision a Myanmar, he continued, where the divisions of war give way to the unity of peace. Cardinal Bo called on faithful to tangibly embody Mary's virtues through supporting displaced families, engaging in interfaith efforts, and advocating for peace and justice. He prayed for the intercession of Our Lady of Lourdes and urged everyone this Jubilee of Hope to renew their commitment to building a world where all people can live in peace and dignity. I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.
Caritas Internationalis has expressed grave concern over the sudden closure of USAID-funded programs and offices worldwide. Secretary General Alistair Dutton says the cutting off of this essential humanitarian aid puts many millions of lives at risk, especially since alternative funding and emergency plans may not be possible in time to save lives. He spoke to Vatican News about the immediate consequences of the closure.
And so now we have food in warehouses but we're unable to transport it to where it is meant to be going. We have ships which are arriving in ports, but we can't pay for them to be unloaded. And we don't know whether we can pay for the warehouses where the food would have been stored or for the trucks to transport them. And in other types of programs, in health programs, we know that now I saw one program where just in about 9 or 10 countries here in West Africa, about 6 million people will not receive medicine as a result of the health programs being stopped. In Sudan today, we know we have 750,000 people who are in famine. If they don't receive food aid, they will start to die in large numbers. And we have famine in many other parts of the world, not to mention people who are not yet in famine, but are very, very, very hungry and malnourished. We're seeing in other areas, in Syria, camps where people are reliant for food and water and sanitation, that the services can't be maintained. USAID has done wonderful work for years, feeding the hungry, giving water to the thirsty, clothing the naked and giving shelter to those who are homeless. And now all of those who we thought we could help with the support from USAID are facing a life without that help. And they will suffer enormously if they don't die themselves.
And that was Alistair Dutton, Secretary General of Caritas Internationalis. Finally, Pope Francis on Monday sent a message to participants in the 7th Indigenous Peoples Forum organised by the UN's International Fund for Agricultural Development. As Devon Watkins reports, in it he stressed the right of Indigenous peoples to preserve their cultural identity in the face of seizures by multinational companies and governments.
Organized by the UN's International Fund for Agricultural Development, or IFAD, the forum focuses on the theme Indigenous Peoples' Right to Self-Determination, a Pathway for Food Security and Sovereignty. In his message, the Pope noted that land, water, and food are not mere commodities, but the very foundation of life and the bond of Indigenous peoples with nature. He said they have the right to preserve their identity, but noted that this right is severely threatened by the increasing seizures of farmland by multinational corporations and states. These seizures, he lamented, cause much harm to Indigenous peoples and put at risk communities' right to a dignified life. The defense of the right to preserve one's culture and identity requires the recognition of the value of their contribution to society, he said, as well as the safeguarding of their existence and the natural resources essential for their livelihood. Pope Francis added that defense of Indigenous peoples' rights is a matter of justice, along with a way to guarantee a sustainable future for all humanity. In conclusion, Pope Francis prayed that efforts to protect the rights and traditions of Indigenous peoples may bear fruit. I pray to Almighty God that these efforts, he said, may serve as an inspiration to the leaders of nations so that appropriate measures are taken to ensure that the human family walks together in pursuit of the common good, leaving no one excluded or forgotten. I'm Devon Watkins.
And that's all for this edition of Vatican and World News. You can also join us on vaticannews.va, Facebook, X and Instagram. My thanks go to Alberto Giovanetti in studio in the Vatican. I'm Linda Bordoni. Bye-bye.